Do you dread taxes? The stress and complications that come with taxes can be a burden to all of us entrepreneurs. What if I told you taxes can be fun, easy, and understandable? On this episode of Success Magazine Podcast, we are joined by tax expert Tom Wheelwright as we unveil how the government can actually be your partner in achieving financial independence. From programs that pay you for investments to ways to boost revenue and reduce taxes, get ready to have some fun with Tax Talk. Yes, you heard that right. Taxes can be fun and easy with the right knowledge. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Success Magazine Podcast. I am your host, Amy Somerville, and today we are talking money. I am joined by a renowned expert in the space, Mr. Tom Wheelwright, CPA, who is the visionary behind multiple companies that specialize in wealth and tax strategy. He is also an entrepreneur, best-selling author, rich dad, advisor, and international authority on taxation, the person who is going to tell us how to both make more money and keep more money. And I don't know about y'all, but I'm here for that. Tom, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks, Amy. So good to be on your show. Big fan of Success Magazine. Big fan.
Thank you. Well, we are just so thrilled to have you here. I think about the word tax and whether it's right or wrong, true or false. Actually, I want to find out if you think it is false. I think it was Benjamin Franklin who first said, "There's nothing certain in life except for death and taxes." So how do you feel? True or false?
Well,
certain in life.
Well, I don't think it has to be certain. I think for many people it is, but I think that's just a lack of understanding how the tax law works. For a lot of people, including our clients, it's not certain at all. In fact, it's pretty certain that the fastest way to put money in your pocket is to reduce your taxes. It's actually the easiest.
So that is exactly, I thought you might answer that way. I'm really looking forward to getting into some of the details of that. Would you start just, you know, give us kind of a little bit of a background? When did you get into wealth education, and why did you become so passionate about particularly the tax strategy piece?
Well, it actually started when I was in college, University of Utah. I had a terrific tax professor in my accounting undergraduate. And then I went on to get a graduate degree at the University of Texas in tax. I had phenomenal professors there. And spent 7 years with Ernst & Young, including 3 years in their national tax office. I was back there during the Reagan years, so that will age me, but I'm very pleased to say that. And then I spent 4 years as the in-house tax advisor for a Fortune 1000 company. The rest of my life has been, I was an adjunct professor at Arizona State University and their master's, Arizona State University and their master's of tax program for 14 years. And I have been training CPAs and tax advisors and entrepreneurs really for over 40 years. So I think taxes should not be that hard. My mission in life is to make taxes fun, easy, and understandable. And that's why I wrote my first book, Tax Free Wealth. I think that's why it's been so successful. We're on third edition, as you know. And I think the reason it's been successful is because I think it does make taxes fun, easy, and understandable. And once you have a different mindset, your view of it and your willingness to spend time at it changes drastically.
You know, I've seen quite a few reviews of people who have read your books, and the common theme of the reviews is, oh, finally, taxes make sense. So thank you for that, bringing that clarity to us. I want to ask you, you know, a lot of people are familiar with Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the kind of the Rich Dad series. Tell us a little bit, going to that part of your life and your journey and career. Tell us about that work. And as an advisor, how has it impacted your life and career?
Oh, it's been terrific. Robert's a good friend of mine, great mentor. I met him over 20 years ago. I actually bought a CPA firm. So one of my partners left and left a gap in number of clients. All the staff stayed with us. And we had to decide, do we let staff go or do we add new business? And of course, staff is much harder to replace than business. So, right. And we trained them well. They were great staff. So we went out looking for acquisitions, and we acquired a small CPA firm, and one of the clients happened to be Robert Kiyosaki. So I had not read Rich Dad Poor Dad before then.
Okay.
But since, you know, it's like you were mentioning earlier, the Success Magazine just manifested itself. I think Robert and Rich Dad really manifested itself to us. We were looking at the right time. Really the timing couldn't have been better. And we've traveled all over the world together. I mean, 30 countries, 6 continents, hundreds of thousands of people. And you know what it's like to speak in front of thousands of people. And it's been an amazing journey. So he and I, we get together a lot. I mean, we talk at least a couple of times a week, and I'm constantly learning from him. He's constantly sharing videos and articles with me, I'm doing my best to explain things in a really simple way to him when he doesn't understand, when he needs help understanding something. My stupid people trick is really making complex things simple.
That's a gift, not a stupid human trick. That is an absolute gift. And I hear you from your heart when you talk about the synergy between you and other leaders, you and Robert, and having those connections and really sharing and helping each other build and grow and continue to develop the concept here and bring that fun to the concept to others. One of the concepts that I sticks out in my mind, and I have seen a video of you kind of walking through it, but it seems to me that we stop short, certainly as entrepreneurs are familiar or should be familiar with the cash flow quadrant concept, and maybe familiar with it as a kind of an overview. But there's a piece where people stall out, and I don't think I ever connected the tax piece of it with the cash flow quadrant. So can you give us just kind of a big picture overview as we kind of dive into talking about the opportunities with taxes?
Yeah, I think, by the way, that was Robert's second book in the Rich Dad series.
Yes.
And I think it's a brilliant book. It really gives the what to the why. And so cash flow quadrant, basically, there are 4 ways you can make any kind of serious money. One's as an employee, one's a self-employed or a superstar, specialist, a doctor, lawyer, athlete, small business. One's as a big business. Think Warren Buffett, Amazon, think Musk, those types. And then one's as a professional investor, where you're really an inside investor. You know what's going on. I think about Warren Buffett's kind of a combination of the professional investor and the big business owner. He doesn't run businesses, but he does more than just invest in them. And then you look at, professional investors, whether it's frankly, Donald Trump or, any other professional investor that's really made money investing, they've made a lot of money. The interesting thing is I always think that the first question you should ask yourself, or your tax advisor should ask you even better, is how do you make your money? Because how you make your money, Amy, has a huge impact on how much tax you pay. Typically, we find, and I've studied literally over 30 countries, that no matter where you go, and this is particularly true in the U.S., if you make your money as an employee and you're a high-paid employee, you're going to pay about 40%. If you make your money as a self-employed person, you're probably going to pay as high as 60% because you're paying both the employer share and the employee share. As a big business owner, you're going to pay as probably around 20%, which is, by the way, why Warren Buffett said he paid less tax than his assistant. She's a highly paid employee. He's a big business owner. So it makes sense that he would pay less. And then the professional investor who pays as little as 0%. And then of course, the next question, which I'll let you ask if it's interesting to you, the next question is, why is that? But the first question is, well, that is just the way it works. That's the way most countries work.
That is, so it is fascinating. I have a question before we get into the why is that, but just clearly this is a linear approach. You in the kind of series of things, you're going from potentially from employee to self-employed or a specialist to a big owner to investor. Is there a way to go from employee to investor or self-employed to investor?
For sure. That's a really, thank you for asking that question. That's the right question. And the reality is much more difficult to go from a small business to a big business than it is to go from an employee or a small business to an investor. Investing is much, much easier. it's a much, it's not nearly as heavy lift. Going to big business, there just aren't really many people that are going to do it. Big business defined by 500 employees or more. That's a lot of employees. And that's a very big business. So not very many small business owners are going to do that. They don't even want to do that. They'd like to stay, you know, have more of a lifestyle business, or as I think you've called it, a micro business. And so what do you do? Well, then you have to go to the, now there are things, by the way, there are things you can do as a small business owner. The great thing about the U.S. is we have a constitution that says that has an equal protection clause, which means that anybody doing the same thing the same way, it gets the same result. So that under the law. So that means that a small business owner, while they're not typically taxed at 20%, can be taxed at 20%. So those are things, those are changes. Like when we have a new client come to into our one of our franchisees, what we do is we first go through that and say, okay, if you're a small business owner, how do we get you from that 60% range to the 20% range? And that's actually something that we can do, you know, in a couple of months. I mean, we can get you down that low. So we can get the tax down even if you're not increasing the size of your business. It's just that big businesses naturally are set up to be taxed at 20%, whereas small businesses tend to want to cut corners, reduce their expenses, and they don't think of tax as their expense when it's really their biggest expense. And then a professional investor, that's really, it's not that hard, but it does take a lot of, I mean, it takes a lot of education, a lot of training. You got to listen to the podcast like this one and, you know, the success podcasts and that, and you've got to know what you're doing before you do it. Otherwise you can get in big trouble. But yeah, you can easily, absolutely. I've seen hundreds, thousands of people going from the E quadrant to the I quadrant.
Okay. So we should definitely jump in and talk about that. A good portion of our success audience, I would say, are the, you know, solopreneurs or the entrepreneurs, the smaller business owners. I want to talk about in your world, the exciting world of taxes, which is, you know, something very few people probably refer to it as, you know, seeing it more as a necessary evil. But to your point, like there's just incredible opportunity to not just see it as a necessary evil, but as one of the largest expenses and something that you can manage and really leverage to support your business. Let's talk about, I mean, I think we're just going to cut to the chase here. What's the best way to maximize our income and minimize the taxes that we pay? That's a big question, I know.
You know what? It is, but I can really simplify it for you. First thing you have to do is understand what the tax law is and what it isn't. It's not a penalty for living in the United States. It's not.
Okay.
While the tax law does raise revenue, that's one of its goals. It is functions, not its sole goal. And it's not even, I would argue, it's not even the primary goal. If you look at the tax law is fundamentally a series of incentives. And so I look at the tax law, now I read the tax law, so don't expect anybody else to do that. Okay. That's why I'm here.
We appreciate that you do. I can translate for us.
Okay. tax-free wealth. That's the simple version, right? So, but there's roughly 6,000 pages of tax law, not counting the regulations, anything else. I mean, you can get into millions of pages when you get into court cases and so forth. Roughly 6,000 pages. There's one line. This is all income's taxable unless we say it isn't. And there's another line that says no expenses are deductible unless we say they are. Okay, so here you have a couple of pages. You've got some charts and tables to tell you how much tax to pay. The rest of the law, 99.9% of the law, is a roadmap to reducing your taxes. It's just a guide. And if you change your thought process from, wait a minute, this is out to get me, to, oh, maybe this is out to help me, then it completely changes the amount of time you're willing to spend at it. And it completely changes your energy towards it. I know success is a lot about energy. And it's really changes how you think. And that actually is the whole purpose behind tax-free wealth. It's changed the way you think about the tax law. Because if you think that, wait a minute, we're partners with the government, we don't get to choose that. The first time you got a paycheck when you were a teenager, you looked at that, you looked at the paycheck, the pay stub, and you go, who the heck is FICA? Why are they taking all my money? right? The government's your partner. You don't get to choose that.
Okay.
What you do get to choose is, are you a silent partner with the government or are you an active partner with the government? And the government simply says, if you do things we want you to do, then we will give you tax incentives to do them. So if you, so I told you the first question you always have to ask is, how do I make my money? And the government, by the way, says, if you make your money a different way, okay, then we'll give you a different result. If you make your money as a professional investor, we'll give you a better tax result than if you make it as an employee. Think about this. I'll give you a simple example of the incentives difference between employee and business owner. During the pandemic, we all worked out of our house.
Yes.
If you're an employee, you got no tax benefit for it. And if you were self-employed, you did. All that's saying is the government is saying, well, look, we want to encourage you to own a business. If you own a business, we'll give you a tax break for doing that. And the government learned a long time ago, it was really started by JFK in the 60s. He was the first one to really lean into this approach, that government really understood people don't like paying taxes. So a little bit of a tax incentive goes a very long ways, both emotionally, okay, and just to as an encouragement. So for example, if you in you and I give this example in my other book, The Win-Win Wealth Strategy, if you start a business, let's say you just start a small business in your home, the tax benefits of starting that business can equally be greater than the cost of starting the business. That's hard to, it's hard to get your arms around that. But literally, right, if the small business costs $4,000 to start the small business, the government will likely give you up to $5,000 or $6,000 of incentives for starting that small business. And, you know, once we start thinking that way, we go, okay, what other things do they incentivize? And then it's like, okay, if I do what the government wants me to do, I get a tax break. If I don't do what they want me to do, I just pay high taxes, but it's my choice. And the goal is, and I know the goal with any entrepreneur is, we all want a choice. No entrepreneur in the world has ever asked the question, tell me what I can't do. It's always,
that's right,
how do I do what I want to do?
Well, that's how we got into this business. It's a personal drive to become an entrepreneur, to do things our way. And then it does feel like we get handcuffed. What a great example. You mentioned the win-win wealth strategy. I want to ask you, that's a great strategy. And that's good to know that we can partner with the government in that way. I also want to go back and just highlight your point about mindset. You're right. That is a big piece of what we do at Success. And I don't think most people structure that in their brains that way, to say, gosh, if we just change our mindset and how we think about taxes and working with the government as a partner that really wants to see us succeed, and look into, you know, the opportunities of where we can partner with the government. I will tell you right now, my mind has been flipped. Would you be willing to share with us any more? I know you've got several different investments that the government is willing to pay as an investment, or we'll say as a business owner. That one being key. Working from home was being, you know, working from your home is a key opportunity. What else is out there?
Oh, there's, I mean, thousands of opportunities. We broke it down into seven categories of investments the government will pay you to make. And business is number one. Now, we actually looked at 15 different countries and did charts and tables, look at those 15 different countries. And what we found was that every government provides incentives for business. They're all different incentives. But for example, a business owner pays tax on their net income, an employee pays tax on their gross income, meaning employees don't get much in the way of deductions. They're just paying on whatever they get from their employer. Whereas a business owner, every dollar they put back in their business is not taxed. And so you can continue to build wealth without paying tax. We actually, in Tax Free Wealth, I go through a program I call Buy, Borrow, Die. And it's basically, you buy an asset, one the government wants you to buy. You grow that asset. Then you borrow from the bank using the asset as collateral. So debt's not taxable because you have to pay it back. And then when you die, the tax that you would pay if you'd sold the asset, the tax goes away. That's the way our tax law works. So literally you can take, you know, people always talk about, well, a lot of this is just deferring it, postponing it to a later year, you know, like an IRA 401k, that's just postponing your tax to a later year. But if you look at some of these investments, like real estate, for example, or a business, when you die, if you defer it until you die, then when you die, the tax goes away. It's done. You can't do that, by the way, with a 401k or a pension plan. Once, if you die and that pension plan gets paid out to your heirs, they have to pay tax on it. So somebody's going to pay tax on that 401k.
So I was just going to ask you that. So what assets does the government want us to buy? You mentioned businesses, you mentioned real estate.
They'd really like us to, they'd like us to buy hard assets. So think hard assets. So they want us to buy invest in energy. Energy is a huge one, whether it's renewable energy or fossil fuel. Actually, the government right now does not care, based on the tax law. You do get big deductions and credits for renewable energies, probably more than you do for fossil fuels right now. I think the deduction is better for renewable energy than it is for fossil fuel, just because you get credit, which is dollar for dollar plus deduction if you do it the right way. So energy is a big one. You know, the economy runs on energy. The world runs on energy. So the government is very, very high on increasing energy. Employment is a huge one. We've recently, you've seen all this stuff on the employee retention credit. There've been a lot of shenanigans going on, but a lot of those employers are legit, and those are legitimate credits. And that's simply a tax benefit for keeping your employees during the pandemic. That's what that tax benefit's for. And so that's saying, look, we want you to keep your employees. If you do, we'll help you pay for those employees. So we'll contribute to that. Another one is agriculture. So I've had a lot of farmers, ranchers as clients over the years, and I've rarely had one that paid tax. The tax incentives are so great for food production in this country that it's pretty rare for a farmer or a rancher to pay tax. They've got to have an extraordinary year to pay any tax. So it's a huge incentive. I have clients who've gone into Wagyu beef production or other types of ranching or farming. They go, well, wait a minute. If we have troubles, you know, one thing that people always need, they always need shelter, right? They always need energy and they always need food. So, you know, you look at what are the basics that people need that the government wants to make sure that there's plenty of, there's probably a tax incentive for it.
That makes a lot. You're making this fun. That's so clear. As you're talking though, and you're talking about opportunities to, I don't want to say, I think that there are times in conversations that I have with particular business owners that I hear like, oh, are you cheating? Are you skirting the tax? Are these really, you know, super smart strategic moves? I'll give you an example. I hear often have conversations with people who have solid businesses who are moving to places like Puerto Rico, for example. Is that a smart strategic move? What does that look like? Or is that just kind of a cheat?
No, let's look at the incentive. So cheating means you're doing something that is not allowed. Okay. That's cheating. If you're doing something that is allowed, and especially if it was intentionally allowed. So there are loopholes. Okay, hear about loopholes. Loopholes are unintentional. That happens sometimes. Congress passes a law. They're not clear enough on it. Some loophole comes up. I'll give you a perfect example of that. So real estate has big incentives. One of those incentives for a developer is that they can take their share of the success of that real estate development in capital gains. Mm-hmm. And then they don't have to pay ordinary income, whereas if their employees are paying ordinary income tax, 40%, but they're only paying 20% because that's capital gains rates, right? That was an incentive intended for real estate. Now hedge funds have figured out they can do it. That's a loophole.
Are
they cheating? No, they're not cheating. They just found a loophole, right?
It
may not have been intended for them, but it's there. And you know, the government can close loopholes. So it's not like the government can't close the loophole. But let's take Puerto Rico. So I've had clients who moved to Puerto Rico. first of all, you have to want to live in Puerto Rico because you do have to live in Puerto Rico. But this was set up because, and it's actually been a very successful program, because what they wanted is they wanted successful business owners to live in Puerto Rico and contribute to the Puerto Rican economy. Puerto Rico has historically been a third world country, even though it's part of the U.S. Technically, it's really a third world. It's been a third world country. The Puerto Rican tax benefit, the 4% tax, has created entire huge developments in Puerto Rico for wealthy, successful business owners from the mainland. Yes. To settle there, and they contribute enormously to the Puerto Rican economy. I mean, enormously. I mean, yes. They contribute to the infrastructure, et cetera. So what you really have to look at is, what's the policy behind it, right? And the reality is, are all of these incentives, do they make sense? No. I mean, frankly, listeners may not like me saying this, but the state and local tax deduction makes absolutely zero sense. There's no way it makes sense to incentivize people to live in high tax states. That makes no right. sense. That to me, that's bad tax policy, but it's still there. You know, you're still going to get a $10,000 deduction. They took that one away primarily in 2017. We'll see what happens as the law changes over the next couple of years, but, cheating. So here's another interesting part of this is that the IRS has been, as you probably know, has been focused on wealthy taxpayers. And they actually just came out with a report and they found that wealthy taxpayers, they cheat or make mistakes half as often as the average taxpayer. So, you know, there's all this thought about the wealthy are cheating. No, the wealthy just understand the law. And that's all they're doing. They're just doing what I say in tax-free wealth. They're just following what I'm telling you. Just do it. What's interesting is I've never had any tax advisor, tax professional come back to me and question whether the things in tax-free wealth are legal or cheating. Not one. Not ever. In 12 years. Not even once. And that's because, look, these are just fundamentals. Just nobody's ever explained them to the general public before.
That's fantastic. And I do want to say I have some just unbelievable, successful friends who have moved their businesses and invested incredibly into the economy in Puerto Rico, and love seeing that and love hearing that that is really an opportunity, not only that it betters both sides, right? Tell me about registering businesses? Is there a particular state or states that it is smarter to register a business in?
Well, so interestingly enough, any state where you do business, they can tax you. So the fact that you register a business in Texas, if you're doing all the work in California, you still are taxed by California. So mm-hmm. registering the business in Texas is not going to help you. Okay. Now living in Texas is, because remember, just like in the U.S., you're taxed no matter where the income is earned. Mm-hmm. Wherever your residence is, you're taxed on that income in that state, no matter where it's earned. So you can live in Texas, and even if the money's earned in California, technically you're taxed in Texas. Now you can also be taxed in California. Okay, what we have in the U.S. is we have a mechanism called non-resident tax credits, so that you never pay tax. You shouldn't pay tax twice. In other words, you may pay tax to the state you do the work in, but then get a credit in your home state. Okay. But the fact of registering your business in another state really does not have much effect on your taxes. Okay. It's where's the work done? That's how the law works. And frankly, the Supreme Court has upheld that's how the law works.
Okay. I've got one final question. Well, I say one final, but you never know. I can't totally bank on that. This has been fascinating. When it comes to how about like personal income tax, company tax, capital gains, you mentioned moments ago, the evolution of tax, I'm going to ask you to put on your vision glasses here. Let's say in the next 10 years, what advice can you give us to stay ahead of the game? Or, you know, what is it that we need to be, should we be listening to you, reading your books? How do we stay ahead of the game?
Well, first of all, I recognize that we're at historically low tax rates. So they're not likely to go down.
Got it.
They're only likely to go up, especially on the higher income. They're only likely to get more progressive than they already are, meaning the more income you earn, the higher the tax rate. Honestly, we always say that investing is a team sport. And so while I've made it as simple as I can in tax-free wealth, it's kind of like those commercials with the race car drivers. You know, this is a closed track professional. Don't do it on your own. And I would say the same thing to every entrepreneur. You need a CPA. And the number one question I get when I travel all over the world is, how do I find a CPA? How do I find a local tax advisor? How do I find somebody who understands what you do? And because of that, we actually start developing a franchise. So we now have a franchise, Wealthability franchise, and I train them, and they're under, they do things the way I teach them how to do it. We have our own software, all of that. And that's really so that if you really wanted the easy button, that's the easy button. You just go to wealthability.com and you get one of our franchisees, and that's the easy button. But you really do need professional team members. You need an attorney. You need a tax advisor, who, by the way, should also be your tax preparer. You need insurance agents, right? You need people on your team as a business owner. It's not a solo sport. It's really not. It's not like golf, tennis. But even if you look at golf and tennis, the best golfers, the best tennis players, they have coaches. They have, caddies, they have people who are helping them along the way. They don't do it by themselves. And so if you're going to be really successful, you really do need the additional professional help.
I love that, thinking of it as kind of a team sport, and love that advice. Using your analogy for sports as, looking for a coach, as you change the way that you potentially do business or your income levels, are you leveling up with higher level coaches every time?
You are. It's actually one of the reasons we started a franchise. We used to have a big CPA firm. And what we found is that we only had a very small swath of people that we could handle in that CPA firm. But with a franchise, we've got franchisees who handle brand new people, and then franchisees like my CPA firm that's a franchisee that can hire the most complicated stuff. And what that means is, within our system, you can actually move up and not leave the system. Which that's one of the reasons we did it. It's that nobody had ever done this before. We're going, wait a minute, people need a way to level up. But how do they level up but stay with the same thought process, the same mentality, the same perspective? And really the right way to do that is to have just different levels of franchisees.
I love that. And it sounds like you've provided opportunity for people to, kind of move through the system, whether it is, picking up a book, getting a initial CPA and getting involved on the franchise level. Really, really appreciate you've just brought a mountain of information for us today, and you have made it fun. I want to ask you, I guess, what is truly my final question, a question that I ask of all guests, which is, how do you, Tom Wheelwright, define success?
For me, success is, doing things that you absolutely love doing and that you are better at than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And the way you do it is better than anybody else. So I always tell my franchisees, you're not looking for the same client as another franchisee. You're looking for clients that are perfect for you. And that's, I think we ought to look for customers who are perfect for us. We ought to be doing what we do better. Because we'll have more fun at it. I mean, to me, success is really enjoying everything you do, and you're going to enjoy things that you're good at and things that you are uniquely suited for much better than, doing something you're just fighting through all the time.
I really appreciate that definition. This is a definition, again, that I ask of all of our guests, but certainly have asked everyone from my children to my 90-year-old grandparents. And I will say that my children's definition of success really complements yours, or very similar, in that they see at this point that success is doing what you want with those that you want to do it with. And it sounds
children
like
are brilliant.
Aren't they brilliant? Doing what you love with the people you love, connecting your brilliance, your skill set with people who need that and really making that perfect connection. Tom, I can't thank you enough for joining us. I am really looking forward to sharing your knowledge bombs with all of my friends and family and look forward to more work with you in the future. To our listeners today, thank you so much for joining for the Success Magazine podcast. Until next time, keep reaching for your goals, defining your own success, one story at a time. And that is bye-bye for now.